regular sensation. Every little step he takes. One thrilling combination. Every move.
If Marvin Hamlisch had given us nothing but a chorus line, we would thank him for his body of work. But he has a large body of work for which he remembered many awards. He died yesterday at the age of 68. He had strong connections to the city of Milwaukee. Over the years, many Wisconsin audiences heard Marvin Hamlisch conduct the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. Barbara Streisand said of him he was a true musical genius, but above all that, he was a beautiful human being. We'll hear some of his compositions and talk about his musical life this hour of the program. We'll have three marvelous guests with us. We'll hear Marvin Hamlisch talk about his introduction to music and his writing The Way We Were, the song that probably made him famous. And we'll hear many selections from a chorus line. We'll hear Aretha Franklin singing a song that Marvin wrote in 1977. And we also welcome your memories of Marvin Hamlisch. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And you can also post messages on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Tom Strini is with us in our Milwaukee studios, Third Coast Digest senior editor and a managing partner of Vital Media Group. He was with the Milwaukee Journal and then the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as dance critic, critic at large, and music critic for 27 years. And he posted a piece yesterday, Marvin Hamlisch, the last author of the Great American Songbook, which I urge you to read. Tom, a great pleasure to see you. Thanks for being with us.
I'm happy to be here, Kathleen. Nice to see you again.
And you were listening to Marvin Hamlisch in preparation for this show and thinking about your encounters with him.
I was. I only interviewed him twice, I think, over the years. And I remember the first time I met him was in the lobby of the Pfister when early in his tenure as principal pops conductor. And it was around, he was doing a Christmas concert that year. And we're walking through the lobby, and he just stops in his tracks. And he says, listen to that. And it was the sleigh ride was being played on the Muzak in the hotel lobby. And then he went on. He did this riff, like 20 minutes, about sleigh ride and how much he likes it and everything. And, I mean, the guy was just, with music, he was sort of like a kid in a candy store. And it was like it made no difference what the style was. He saw that bright, shiny wrapper, and he just went for it. His enthusiasm and his passion for all of these different styles is reflected in his own work. I mean, I didn't realize until I got to know him and started thinking about it and going to all his concerts the range of what he did. And, for example, a score like The Swimmer, the Burt Lancaster movie, which is a great movie, by the way, from 1971, it sounds like Debussy. It doesn't...
Really?
It doesn't sound... You would never in a million years say, oh, yeah, Marvin Hamlisch wrote that. And then you have Chorus Line, which, you know, he also fitted the music, the Scott Joplin ragtime music, to The Sting, that mm-hmm. movie. And then you hear Chorus Line, and you realize he studied Scott Joplin really, really carefully. And then, one, the song we just heard on the intro is sort of like a ragtime.
Hmm.
I mean, it's very much in that sort of genteel but jazzy tradition of Scott Joplin. So this guy was a sponge. I mean, he was just taking it all in and then putting it back out with his own little spin on it.
Mm-hmm. Also joining us in studio, Darcy Hamlin, third horn for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, founder of the Milwaukee Brass Quintet. You have had Marvin Hamlisch as a conductor. I understand that he was fun to listen to between the compositions and that the audience loved when he would do these, give me a title of a song, and then there would be a composition on the scene.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here, by the way.
Thank
I'm a big
you for
fan
being
of your
with
show.
Us.
I remember actually about 15 years ago, I was freelancing in the Cincinnati Symphony and Pops, and that was the first time I'd ever worked with him. And it was in the mid 90s, and he would call out to the audience to give him subject matter with which to spin a song, just to make up a song on the spot. And I remember, this is how memorable he is as a songwriter. I remember that it was Bill and Hillary Clinton and lawn people, the people who would sit on the lawn out in Riverbend. And he would just spin the song, and I can still remember the song. 15 years later, I still remember the song. So, and I just remember growing up so immersed in Marvin Hamlisch's music. My mom was a private clarinet teacher, and she would teach his songs to her students. And so I remember hearing them all the time. My sister, when she was practicing piano, would practice his theme from the movie Ice Castles, Through the Eyes of Love. And she would play that song forever. She loved it. So, and then we had an LP. Remember LPs?
We had an LP of
A Chorus Line that we would listen to. And that was very thrilling and exciting to listen to. So, yeah.
I love A Chorus Line. I know a lot of people in our audience do. He won a Pulitzer for that. Why, Tom?
I think it captures a theatrical family. The gypsy life is very exotic to most of us. The idea of throwing yourself into something physically and emotionally, very much like an Olympic athlete, and then you have a little brief flame and it's over. Mm. And What I Did for Love is about the passion of pursuing something that is all-consuming. Most of us don't do that. Most of us slide into our cubicles and wait for it to be over. Well, dancers aren't like that. And that particular book and that musical really sort of got to that white-hot essence of being a dancer. And the score is danceable in ways that you don't expect it to be. And so it really gave room within the dance discipline of the thing for these little private moments of certain dancers. And I think the audience responded to that, and it you felt like you were lifting the curtain and seeing what's going on behind the magic. And as big and splashy a show as it is, it's intimate in that way. And I think those are some of the elements of it. Except for one, I don't think the songs have had much of a life outside of that show because they're so wedded to the story and wedded to the genre. I mean, very few people cover those songs. But it's as a self-contained thing, I think it's really, really important about its insights into the theatrical life and to the insights of what it means to be fully committed to your occupation.
And that show certainly lives on. Certainly lives on.
Oh, sun never sets on a Chorus Line.
Here's one of those private moments. I like your description that you find in this song at the ballet.
Everything was beautiful at the ballet. Graceful men lift lovely girls in white. Yes, everything was beautiful at the ballet. I was happy at the ballet.
Marvin Hamlisch was trained as a classical musician, going to Juilliard when he was only 7 years old. Can you hear classical training in what you're hearing right now and in his body of work, Darcy?
Absolutely. It would always astonish me when he would sit down and just rhapsodize on a regular theme. In fact, I think I don't remember exactly which song it was, but I remember, I think it was Happy Birthday. At a particular concert, he sat down and he played Happy Birthday in every possible style of classical music that you could imagine. There was Baroque, there was Rachmaninoff with these grand rippling chords, and then there was a Chopin waltz, and then there was a Mozart classical one, and then there was Beethoven with the, you know, heavy octaves in the left hand, and it was just astonishing. I would listen to him play and just think, how does this man walk around with all of this talent? It just seemed impossible that one human being could contain the talent that he seemed to have, both as a pianist and a songwriter. And in addition to that, as a showman, I mean, when he would come to these, when he would step on stage, the audiences would just go wild. And he had this really amazing ability to interact with the audience. And he was also just a consummate comedian. He was just hysterical. And the orchestra, I remember sometimes the orchestra just, you know, having a hard time maintaining composure on stage just because of some of the things that he would say. So, yes, absolutely.
And you can hear it in some of his compositions, his classical training, Tom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his grasp of harmony was so thorough that it became intuitive with him. And that's how he can sit down and improvise a Chopin waltz on the theme of Happy Birthday. It's not easy to get through Juilliard. I don't care who you are. But by the time you get out of there, if you get out of there, you know what you're doing. And I think this natural, intuitive grasp, coupled with the explicit knowledge he gained there, led to the kind of facility that he had, where somebody could shout out, "Email Goddess," and he could make a song and wed lyrics to it, and he knew what his harmonies were going to be and how those periodic phrases play out. He knew that, and then he could just let his knowledge work in an intuitive way to do things like that. You know, Mozart and Beethoven did the same things.
Oh, my. We're going to hear from Marvin Hamlisch. This is a 2011 interview with Shalom TV, and he's talking about his introduction to music.
My father played six instruments, and we had a piano in the house. And I, as I used to say, it wasn't so much that I went to the piano and went, wow, 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 because what I really wanted to be was the center fielder for the New York Yankees. A lot of people don't realize this was my dream. But the dream that I could do was I could play the piano. I had a very good ear. My father played the piano. It was in the house. I can't say I loved it, but I liked it a lot. And then as you become older and you realize that when you play something and a girl by the name of Alice walks over to the piano and says, "Gee, that's nice," you go, "You know what? I could work this out. This could work."
You hear him and you think it's hard to think of Marvin Hamlisch as not being with us anymore. When I saw the Gershwin concert in whenever that was last spring, and I was saying, we got to have him on the next time he's in Milwaukee. So when I read this news yesterday that he was dead, I thought, not Marvin Hamlisch. He was a relatively young man, incredibly vital person. To have somebody stop like that when you're waiting for his next appearance, and you must feel that, both of you, as a critic and as a musician.
Well, his face is all over the MSO Pops brochure for the coming season. Nobody saw this coming. He was in the middle of work on a musical comedy based on Jerry Lewis's 1963 movie, The Nutty Professor. Go figure that one out. I don't know. But that was supposed to open. I don't think he saw it coming. Nobody saw it coming. He was only 68.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very shocking to me as well. I just remember the vitality and the ebullience and the humor that his concerts would just share with the audiences. And it's difficult. It's very difficult to imagine that just gone, poof. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked as well. I don't quite know how to process it, actually.
Mm. You know, this is something that has reverberations beyond Milwaukee. I think he had four other orchestras, maybe five.
Remarkable.
Around the country. And Doc did this, too. Doc Severinsen did it, too, where he would be the principal pops conductor at several orchestras around the country. So all these orchestras are going to be scrambling to not just plug in a new conductor, but in some cases alter the programs, because Marvin didn't just show up and wave the stick. He brought singers in. He found arrangers. He really sort of packaged these programs. And I understand MSO is going to try to stick with those programs to the extent that they can. But, you know, he was more than just a conductor. He was very active.
He must have worked all the time to be doing this much, all of these orchestras, all of these films. He must have worked and worked and worked and worked.
Yeah, he did. But, you know, he told me that, let's see, I'm trying to remember who the advice came from, but be born, find something you really like to do, and do it until you drop dead. Mm-hmm. And he told me this, and he told me that That's how he lived, and he really lived by it. He had all the money in the world. He didn't need to write another note. He didn't need to be flying around on planes and all the hassle that goes with that. He did it because that's what made him feel alive, and you could see it when he was on stage.
Mm-hmm. He also had this. I've interviewed him a couple of times over the years and seen him on stage several times. I know that Tom has written, I want for you to talk about how difficult he could be with musicians, but there was also something very unassuming about this man, which it endeared him to me, because he was so... He wasn't self-effacing, but he seemed to be interested in you, and he was just a genuine person who wasn't very full of himself, which I thought, here's a guy who was so accomplished, and he seemed to be genuine. But he could be difficult. So let's take on the whole personality.
Darcy was there, I wasn't.
So. Well, you know, I think, gosh, how to approach this tactfully. I think that when there's somebody like Marvin Hamlisch who is so focused and who has such a vision and who has such talent and knows so completely what he wants, anything that gets in the way of that can be a frustration, a source of frustration. And I understand that. And there were some rehearsals where he would get frustrated. And perhaps, you know, I was sympathetic. Sometimes these frustrations, I have to admit, made the rehearsals a little bit more stimulating, as long as that frustration wasn't directed at you, obviously. But you know, the thing is that it was always worth it. The concerts were always phenomenal. And, you know, I think that we were all, to some degree, to varying degrees perhaps, but to some degree, were totally willing to, you know, to sit through a little frustration in rehearsal in order to enjoy the final product in these incredibly engaging, entertaining, virtuosic performances.
Marvin Hamlisch died yesterday at the age of 68. He had strong associations with the city of Milwaukee, having conducted for some years the Pop Symphony. And, of course, he has this huge body of work. We have yet to talk about Barbra Streisand, and I think he probably became a star because of the way we were, and he won awards for that. And, of course, we remember him for so many scores to so many films. He also wrote a song for Aretha Franklin, or she made it popular, Break It to Me Gently, which I wanted to hear sometime this hour as well. We welcome your thoughts about Marvin Hamlisch. Here is our email address. It is talk@wpr.org. We can also go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We evidently are having a few problems with our phone system today, which is too bad, but we're trying to get that up and running. In the meantime, use one of the other forms of communication available to us in this high-tech year of 2012. So we'll continue our conversation with our guests in studio in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Aretha Franklin with the Marvin Hamlisch song, Break It to Me Gently. We're going to talk a little bit about, and hear Marvin Hamlisch actually talk about The Way We Were. This is another clip from that interview on Shalom TV, talking about that film, and we'll talk about it after he talks about it.
Originally, the film started at a college, and they asked me to go to the college to get a sense of the college, and when I went to the college, there were bells that rang every hour. Every hour you heard this at the college. I don't know why, but I guess that they identified the hour. So when I came home, this was what I did for the first few days. That was it. That turned into... And again, days go by, you know. That turned into thinking about long notes because Barbra Streisand's singing. And then, of course, we were blessed with a fantastic title. I mean, the book was a great title. So what you do is you make sure that in the song you leave enough room for the title. And that's slowly but surely how you plot the song.
And now, of course, we have to hear some of that song, and we'll talk about the association between Barbra Streisand and Marvin Hamlisch. This song is Memories.
because of the way we were. Scattered pictures of the smiles we left behind.
Barbra Streisand and Marvin Hamlisch were very good friends and collaborators. She performed many of his songs, and he was her, talk about being at the right moment with the right person at the right time, her rehearsal pianist for Funny Girl. And that probably was the moment, if it hadn't been for that moment, we wouldn't be talking about Marvin Hamlisch the way we are, perhaps. Do you think?
That's absolutely right. And Marvin told the story about being a rehearsal pianist, and he was right out of Juilliard. He was just a kid. And he got this gig as rehearsal pianist, and she kind of liked him, and he was very good. And he got invited to a party through her. And he says, oh, I'm not going to that party. And she told him, well, you know, this big movie producer is going to be there, Sam Spiegel. Why don't you go to this party and play piano at the party? He said, okay. And so... Well, and there's one little quip that goes along with this. She says, I'm not going to play piano at some party. I'm Barbra Streisand's rehearsal pianist. I'm too big for that. I get donuts from Barbra Streisand. That's what he said. And but he went anyway when he heard that Sam Spiegel was going to be there. And so he's playing, gets to chatting up Sam Spiegel. Next thing he knows, he's in Hollywood making movie scores.
Oh, I didn't know that story. What a story, Tom.
So that was hugely important in his career. And that led, before Chorus Line, he had a string of really important movies where he would write a title song for him. Remember back in the day, you used to have title songs with movies. And then he would score the whole movie. So, and he, being a Juilliard guy and very facile, he had the chops to do it. That's really hard on-demand composition. That's not easy to do.
Yeah. He also, I heard him say, I think it was on some newscast last night I was watching, he decided that he would put, that they ended that movie with a theme from this to make it a tearjerker, that they had focus groups back in those days, and to make people cry. Now we remember the score perhaps more because she's hugging Robert Redford and the music is playing and the theme and everybody's crying.
Well, you know, it's called the science of sentiment. He was an expert in the science of sentiment. And that, you know, people think, oh, this is all coming from your heart. But, I mean, some of it is and some of it is. How can I press somebody's buttons? And he was a very good button pusher. And you know what? That's the craft of being mm-hmm. a movie composer. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
I want to talk about being a Pops conductor for a while. What does it mean to be, what's the range of music that he loved to conduct and to compose? And what did musicians, classically trained musicians, think about performing in a Pops performance?
Well, when you say the word Pops, it can mean anything from jazz, Broadway, theater, pop music, rock music.
Sousa.
Exactly.
Sousa Martin,
exactly.
Right?
It can be anything, patriotic, movie music. And it depends on, it really varies from section to section what you think about a certain program. And it also varies, you know, the kind of personality that you are. I personally love having a week where I don't have to, you know, be on in the hot seat all the time. I love Pops concerts. I think they're fun. I generally enjoy a lot of the music. For instance, brass players tend to be very enthusiastic about playing movie scores because the horn parts are generally really great. The brass parts are great. Broadway is really fun too because those the singers can come and they can add a different perspective and a different breadth of timbre to the sound. So it really, to be a Pops conductor, you have got to be so multifaceted and multi-talented, not only with your musical range and ability, but also with your ability to do things. Marvin had to conduct, he had to plan all of the concerts, all of the repertoire. He had to perform on the piano. He had to gather the singers, to attract the singers that would come, the artists. And he had to entertain the audiences and to somehow bring all of this together, I mean, it really requires a jack of all trades. And Marvin was absolutely that in spades.
Tom, what do you think about conducting pop symphony? Are musicians saying, oh, I got to do this weekend, or are they enjoying it?
Darcy could probably address that more authentically than I could, but I can say, as a 30-year observer of the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, I remember a day when I could go to a Pops concert and the entire orchestra would just droop. It was, oh my God, will this thing ever be over? And I have to say, in the last 10 years or so, really since Doc came along, I see a different attitude in the orchestra about these things, and the programs are just more interesting. They're a little uneven. Under Marvin, they were uneven. I mean, sometimes, you know, you say Marvin is a genuine person, and he is a genuine person. But there was a slight downside to that, because sometimes he was obviously had his head somewhere else and was not really very specific in his cues. The tempos were all over the place. And then you could just hear him saying, wait a minute, I got to focus. And the concert would get better and better, and the playing would get cleaner and cleaner as it went on. And you don't see that on the classical side, where everybody's just a laser beam on one thing. But I could see, you know, just like Darcy said, he had to do a lot of stuff. He's out there chit-chatting with the audience and cracking jokes and, you know, and improvising tunes. And so you can see how, you know, there's this whole, like, birds tweeting and stars revolving around his head, you know, while he's going on. So you can see why that kind of thing would happen. But it's like, when he hit it, it was a home run. And when he missed it, he was back in the dugout, you know. So he was volatile that way. But I think the musicians, well, this goes to just the quality of the orchestra and the attitude of the orchestra, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I was talking with Mark Niehaus, about the principal trumpet, about this a couple of months ago, and he said, you know, the quality of our classical concerts is up here, and it used to be down here, and the quality of our Pops concerts is higher. He says even the Kinder concerts, it's like I remember a ball game that I watched years ago. Andre Dawson's playing out right field for the Cubs, and the Cardinals were just beating their brains out. And late in the game, he comes diving in and makes this crazy catch. And people ask him, interviewed after the game, why did you do that? You could have gotten hurt. You were down by 9 runs anyway. He says, the ball was in play. And that's how the symphony is now. The ball is in play. And they don't care if it's a Kinder concert or a Pops concert. They are fully committed, and it's a beautiful thing to see and hear.
Yes, it is. The ball is in play. We do have a phone number you can use now. If you'd like to call in with your memories, I know many of you have seen Marvin Hamlisch. Our phone number, which is a weird one, but I think this should work, 414-227-2050. That's 414-227-2050. It's a Milwaukee local number, but I think that it should work. We'd love to hear from you. I'm sure that many of you listening have seen shows that he has conducted with the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, but also this other huge body of work. So your thoughts on The Way We Were, A Chorus Line, Sophie's Choice. He did theme music from that. His musical genius. We're remembering Marvin Hamlisch, who died. It's hard to believe. Marvin Hamlisch died at the age of 68. So our phone lines are open for you. Let's hear a little bit more. This is a song. He did some pop songs that I didn't realize he had written. This one by Carly Simon. Do we have that one, Brett? And you'll know this. I think it's from 1977.
Looking, but
Marvin Hamlisch composition. Nobody does it better. You wrote Tom about his musical loves and that he seemed to be, maybe it's the reason I like him so much too, because my music came in the 40s. I am a Gershwin gal. I just love Gershwin and Cole Porter, and so I really resonated with him. That was the music he loved. He didn't do any that I can think of rock and roll. There was a whole big period of time when he was playing Gershwin and Porter.
Yeah, those were staples. That's always the staple of Pop's concerts, the golden age of the Great American Songbook, 1921 to about 1960. And he knew everything about it. He knew everything about Cole Porter. He knew everything about the Gershwins. And when you talk to him, you know, I'm 62. He was only 5.5 years older than I am. But it was like I was talking to my grandfather or George Burns or somebody. I mean, right. Mentally, I mean, he was born in 1944. But he, in a lot of ways, musically, he lived in 1932. Mm-hmm. He was very worried about the loss of that music. He was very worried about kids who don't know who Gershwin was or don't know who Irving Berlin was. And he was always proselytizing for that, and you could see he would do it on stage. And he would say, there's an 8-year-old. What's your name? Thanks for being here. What do you think about this music? You like this music? Tell all your friends, you know. And he would go on and on about it. And I think there's something to that. Because now we're already in the third generation of rock and roll and the second generation of rap. And so that music is getting dimmer, smaller and smaller in the rearview mirror of history, and he feels a need to preserve it, and felt a need to preserve it.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate that. And he felt like one of those guys. That's how he saw himself, as here's Harry Ruby and Irving Berlin and Cole Porter and the Gershwins, and somewhere along that historical line is me, Marvin Hamlisch. My story today says he's probably the last one of that classic American songbook. All that being said, he did not turn a deaf ear to rock. And I mean, he had, but in many of his pieces, had that little backbeat to them, and that little of the softest of soft rock, and a little beat aspect that you wouldn't hear in a true Gershwin song done in period style. So that little, you know, that can let your hips sway in the way of early rock and roll dancing. Mm. So he wasn't completely a child of 1935, but essentially that, I think, is the way he thought.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, as a musician, as a member of a symphony, that because of his love and his keeping alive, preserving what Tom just beautifully described, symphonies will be less likely to play Gershwin and Porter? Was he resurrecting it single-handedly, or are there others, do you think? And do you particularly enjoy playing that kind of music? I just love it, but I was born in the wrong era.
You know, I think that this music will live on. I think that Marvin was certainly a champion of it, and he did a lot to further it and to get it out there so that people could enjoy it and appreciate it. It's interesting. I think that some pieces and some genres are more fun to listen to, and some pieces and genres are more fun to play to listen to. Or you know, and so it really depends on... It really depends on the piece and on the performer and what instrument that you have. I'm not, for the sake of our listeners, I don't want to prejudice anyone against or for a certain kind of music. I will keep my preferences to myself, but I will say that, yes, it does vary.
Mm-hmm. Do you like to listen to Gershwin?
I do. Especially his earlier work, especially his movie music, and also his piano work. Some of the more obscure pieces, like
yes.
Walking the Dog.
Yes.
I love that. It's so iconic to the movie that it was written for.
Yeah. Let's talk about his scores, and let's preface this by hearing a little bit of the theme music, because he composed so much for the movies. This is from Sophie's Choice, Marvin Hamlisch arranged the film score for that film. Marvin Hamlisch composition, he did the film score for Sophie's Choice, and he did a lot of film scores, didn't he, Tom?
Yes, he did, and I was just sitting here thinking, that sounds, if you just played that, I would say Dvorak? You know, I mean, just, he knew, you know, when you're in Juilliard or as a composition major in any school, you will get assignments. Make a piano piece that sounds like Brahms. Make some fake Dvorak. Make some fake Beethoven.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because you get into it, and that's how you understand the characteristics of style. Then you know what makes Beethoven sound like Beethoven by doing that. And this sounds like Marvin Hamlisch figuring out Dvorak. If you just those kinds of expansive harmonies, and you know where the fifths are very spread out and things like that. So this guy knew what he was doing, and it also creates this sort of contemplative mood. The music isn't really going anywhere. It's very stable harmonically, and it just puts you in this quiet, still place. Puts you in a meditative state to really kind of, you know, what did Sophie have to do to live with the terrible thing that happened to her? Well, she had to level it out, didn't she? And so this way, the music sort of underscores the moment, the dramatic moment, and the dramatic sort of setting of the piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was fortunate in that a couple of the films were really good films, too. Sophie's Choice was a marvelous film. And I know some people think it was a little too much, but I really like The Way We Were, too, for its time period. It was a great film. I want to see both of those again. I hope those live on as well.
Well, you know, Nobody Does It Better is from a James Bond film.
Oh,
The Spy Who Loved Me.
That's right. That's right. It is for me. I wonder, what is that? The Jerry Lewis thing, was he able to complete that, Tom?
I don't know. I think it was pretty far along. It was supposed to premiere this fall, I believe, in Nashville or someplace you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
But I can't speak to the how far along he was on that project.
We're talking about Marvin Hamlisch this hour of the program. He died yesterday. Nobody knows how he died. He just died. He'd been sick for a little while. I don't know with what, and he just keeled over, and there was his life. He gave us so much, and we're talking about the range of his talents and his contributions this hour of the program. We have two guests with us in our Milwaukee studios. Tom Strini is senior editor of Third Coast Digest, which is a really terrific web place you should go, because Tom reviews, and he's a very good reviewer, dance and the symphony and music, and he's all over the place. Darcy Hamlin is also with us. Darcy is third horn for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra and founder of the Milwaukee Brass Quintet, and in addition to being the conductor for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, Marvin Hamlisch was also the principal pops conductor for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, the Dallas, Pasadena, Seattle, San Diego symphonies, and probably more than that. We're trying to welcome phone calls. To tell you the truth, I am not sure if our phone system is working, so it would be really nice, even if you want to say anything, if somebody could call us so we can see if it's working. But if you want to say something, that would be even better. So I'm asking for people who have something to say about Marvin Hamlisch, about his music, about songs that you will listen to forever. You saw him, I'm sure, many of you in Milwaukee. We're talking about his musical contributions. So here's a number you should try. And it's a local Milwaukee number, 414-227-2050. We'll see if it works. 414-227-2050. In the meantime, we do have, this talk at WPR.org that you can use, and our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Marvin Hamlisch and music from The Informant. I ought to say The Informant. I don't know how to say that. I don't know that. Is that a film? The Informant? Does anybody know The Informant? It's a whole different sound, isn't it? The police cars are going and we're chasing and we're off.
Yeah, it's right. That sort of glamorous late big band jazz that you heard in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far removed from what Doc did with the Tonight Show Band.
Yeah. Tell me now, what the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra is dedicating the early performances to Marvin Hamlisch. I understand.
Yes, that's true. And I think that everybody's going to really be heartfelt and really going to be appreciating that.
Yeah, I would imagine. How did word spread? Is this something symphony members would talk to each other about? Would you?
I saw it on Facebook before I heard it, but then very quickly thereafter we received notice from the symphony offices, and it was just so shocking. I saw somebody posted "R.I.P. Marvin," and I thought, "What? No!" It was just it just seemed so strange that it should happen that way.
Yeah.
He just didn't seem like he was done with what he was put on this earth to do. I mean, somebody with that much talent, you know, he hadn't even begun to exhaust it.
Yeah, but he did a lot. He did a lot.
He certainly did. This is certainly not to minimize the breadth of his work.
But. Yeah. Now, there's something, when you were talking earlier, Tom, there's something about a standard of living, a way to live. And he did it the right way, didn't he? Because he died early and he gave us all of this. It sounds trite, but live as fully as you can. And this man did that.
Yeah, he never would have been done. After Nutty Professor, there would have been something else.
Right, there would have been something else.
And, you know, think about it. He's running all over the country overseeing pop series at five different orchestras.
I know.
And he's writing this big new musical that, you know, I think it just popped into his head because he knew Jerry Lewis. When I said he got that life advice, he got that life advice from Jerry Lewis when Lewis was 83 about doing it till you drop dead. And he said, that's how I, and Marvin said, that's how I live. And and even when he came to Milwaukee, he just wasn't on stage. He went to High School of the Arts and listened to kids sing.
Did he really?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I remember one concert. A 16-year-old kid walks out on the stage, and Marvin says, you remember this, Darcy, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And Marvin says, well, I was at the High School of the Arts, and I heard this kid sing today, and I'm bringing him out now.
Oh.
His name is Felix Ramsey. He's 16. And he sang Hamlisch's one song, his world peace anthem. And, you know, the house just went, wow, the kid was great.
Aww. I remember that. That was extraordinary.
Yeah. Oh. And, you know, it just to be that engaged, he didn't have to leave his hotel room if he didn't want
to. Right.
But he did want to.
Right.
And I'm sure that he was completely engaged with those kids. And he actually volunteered to come to one of my classes at UWM. I teach an American Songbook course, and but it never worked out. But, you know, he was always reaching out. He was always wanting to be involved and try to kindle the excitement for music that he felt within himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admired him for that.
Yeah. Let's take some phone calls. Our system is working now. Jean in Brookfield, our first caller. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just calling in to say that I was so sad that Marvin Hamlisch passed. I have fond memories of his work, especially as a young piano student back in the 70s. I discovered him through the movie The Sting and was a huge Robert Redford fan and became obsessed with that music kind of and realized that it was actually his versions, his accompaniments of Scott Joplin. And so as a young piano player, started trying to play ragtime. So I loved Marvin Hamlisch.
Mm. I think of all the people when she was talking, I was thinking of everybody sitting at the piano playing his music, and that's still going on, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, that was that movie was really important. Starting about 1966, a guy named Gunther Schuller got really interested in Scott Joplin and started touring with a little band playing ragtime and things like that. And this this movie really caused a helped to boost a great revival of interest in ragtime music, which only was in vogue for about 18 years. At the turn of the turn of the century, so that was a really, really great thing, and I'm sure that Marvin had that in the back of his mind that this was important music. He loved Scott Joplin. If you go to Marvin's web page, there's a big biography of Scott Joplin right there on the front page. Mm. So he was he really felt this kinship with the history of American music.
Mm-hmm. Dan in Washington Heights. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Dan.
Oh.
You're on the... All right, Dan, you're on the air.
Hello.
All right, that's it. And we'll go to another one. Daniel. Hi, Daniel. Daniel calling us from Milwaukee. Hi, Daniel.
Hello?
Yes, Daniel.
Hi. I just wondered if the guest speakers could talk a little bit more about Marvin Hamlisch's connection to Milwaukee and to Wisconsin. That was an interesting... bit to hear some of the stories, but I wondered if they could talk a bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. Darcy?
One of the things that I loved about Marvin, and I actually saw him do this both in Cincinnati, where I was first introduced to him, where I first got to perform with him, and also here in Milwaukee, was his ability to step into a city, find out what the city was passionate about and the most proud of. What were the icons of that city? What were the things that were unique to that city that he could talk about and praise and enjoy? And I remember in Cincinnati, I don't know if it still exists, actually. I've heard that they've been closing a lot of them, but Grater's Ice Cream was a big one. And he would actually have Grater's brought out to him on stage and eat it, and people would just go insane. They just loved it. And I think he's done the same thing here with Cops Custard. And he would actually he would actually have votes like who likes Cops and who likes Leon's, you know. It was just and he, you know, he was very big into Packers, and I remember there was a Pops concert the afternoon of a Packers game, and he would poll the audience, who wants updates on what's going on with the game and who doesn't, and then he would sort of go based on that. I mean, he was just so good at tapping into the pride of a city.
In May of 2009, he was here for a concert, and he walks out and he says, so I was down at the Summerfest grounds this afternoon, and I saw all these people, and they were just going nuts. This city must really love me. And the audience just died laughing, because that was the day that Danny Gokey was at the Summerfest. And Marvin was just, he was so quick to pick up on stuff like this. And he didn't even have to say Danny Gokey's name, because he knew everybody would know what was going on. He was a hilarious guy.
Yeah, yeah. Do we have time for one more phone call? David in Barron. Hi, David.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, David, how are you?
I don't hear you real well. I just wanted to say I'm a professional singer, and I've sung for 38 years in Europe. And, of course, saying that, it means I sing opera. But I've sung at every chance I've had. I've always sung Broadway. To a great response, and I just wanted to say I always was waiting and hoping that Hamlisch one day would go in the direction of Aaron Copland and give us a new twist on great American music with a little bit of contemporary, and of course now it won't happen, and I'm sad. I'm going to miss him.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, David, very much, and I guess that's a way for us to end, other than hearing some of his music. We're all going to miss him.
I know.
He was fun. He was fun to have around. That's a fact.
Yes, he was. Thank you both so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure
being here this hour.
Happy to do it, Kathleen.
Thanks. Thank you. Darcy Hamlin, third horn for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra and founder of the Milwaukee Brass Quintet. Tom Strini is senior editor of Third Coast Digest. Go to their website. It's really good. He, of course, has been a reviewer for the Milwaukee Journal and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for many years. in this city. We appreciate his work. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rob Ferret for producing this hour. Love's what we're